Step out of the shadows and into your sunshine. For generations, we have been limited by what society, colleagues, family members, spouses, and friends think that we should be or become. Slowly, we are molded into their best version of us. One day, we look in the mirror and wonder how we became so far removed from our inner light. These are the stories of powerful women and men who broke their chains and embraced their true purpose. They authentically share their most vulnerable moments and how they found the strength to step into their sunshine. Join us as we share our journeys toward breaking the chain of societal expectations for women and men around the globe. Step into a world of enchantment at La Forêt des Lumières, where magic meets mindfulness in the heart of Brittany, France. Unwind with immersive workshops led by master practitioners offering transformative practices to elevate your well-being. Embark on a transformative journey through lush forests and tranquil ponds, where every moment is exciting. Celebration of holistic living. Discover how to regain your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual power to take back your life. Join us at La Forêt de Lumière and awaken your senses to a world of possibility where every moment is an invitation to thrive. Visit www.rachelcoudronevents.com for more information. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to season three of Step Into Your Sunshine. Now is your time to rise and truly step into your sunshine. This podcast is hosted by yours truly, Rachel Coudron, the owner of Etsy Boutique Coudron's Curiosities and the mind behind La Forêt de Lumière holistic experience that will be going on in France in May of 2025. So if you're into holistic alternative therapies, then this event is for you. Definitely reach out. Today, I have an amazing person to share with you, and I would love for her to introduce herself.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm Munira Adinwala. I'm a pediatric occupational therapist of 26 years, and I'm also a home educating mum to a 12-year-old. And I have a so I used to work with children in a clinic, and then after once lockdown happened, I transitioned to working with parents with neurodivergent kids with their sensory processing, regulation, coordination, and writing through an online program and on online parent consultations.
Thank you so much. Ooh, I'm excited to dive into those aspects that you just mentioned and how you got there and why you got there. But first, we'll start with what were some of the defining moments in your life that shaped who you are?
So one thing is that I have lived in many different countries, and so I was born in Pakistan, but at that time my mom went to Pakistan because that was the culture, is that you go and have your first baby, especially wherever your mother and your family is. But we were living in Taiwan, so I lived in Taiwan for until I was nearly five, and then we went to London, and then when I was in around 13, we moved to the US, and then my parents moved to high school for off the day after I graduated from high school, they moved to Canada. So I think this moving around has been a really big part of my life. And even the first 5 years of my life in Taiwan has actually shaped me quite a lot, even though I don't remember how to speak Mandarin anymore. But I still like, I have a real strong love for noodles. And apparently I had I had this nanny when we lived in Taiwan. I don't know if it's called a nanny or a babysitter, but someone who looked after me while my parents worked a bit. And she fed me noodles all the time. And I still love noodles. It's like my favorite thing ever. And so I think I find so much comfort in noodles, but it's so that has really, even my first 5 years, I don't remember very much, has shaped me a lot. And I've been to Taiwan on a holiday probably about 14 years ago, and I had this really funny kind of feeling that I have been there before, which I had been there before, but it just felt very comfortable to be there as well. So, but also just moving around has been a really big part of my life as a child. And then when I became an adult, I think I didn't want to move around so much anymore. I kind of really wanted to kind of hunker down and get grounded in one place. But I still like moving around in a traveling sense. I get this itch and this desire to like be moving around for to explore different countries, to meet different people, explore different foods. That's the kind of desire I have now.
Oh, how wonderful. Now, this is interesting because this is something I can highly, highly relate to, is moving all over. Now, I definitely didn't move as much as you did growing up. I had sort of the opposite upbringing, where I was raised in the US, central US to be specific, Oklahoma. And I traveled a lot as well growing up and then into my adulthood. And then in my adulthood, back at the end of 2018, I moved to France. And so I find when I meet somebody who has moved a lot, they can understand at a deeper level. Yeah. When you move to a new country, your life just totally changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really quite shocking. For me, I moved from an English speaking upbringing country that was predominantly spoke English, and I felt comfortable there. I didn't realize I felt comfortable there until I was in a situation where I didn't feel comfortable. But I felt comfortable. I understood social norms. I understood how to go about doing things in society, interacting with other people. And when I came to France, I didn't speak French. So I had a major language problem. I also didn't understand things on a cultural level of how to interact with people appropriately or how to interact with systems appropriately. So I would love to know if you experienced any of that throughout your childhood and your upbringing.
Yeah, I think I had quite a lot of that. Just even moving from England to the US, I remember just going to the grocery store and people saying, "Hi, how are you?" And I was like, "Really? You want to know how I am?" And I think it was just something they said to everybody. But I kind of found that really weird, almost, that they would ask me, how are you, you know? And so many things I found difficult as well. Just I found it really hard, actually, just the transition from being in school in England and then going to school in the US. And there was a huge barrier almost, because first of all, we wore uniform, so I had no idea about fashion or fashion sense, and a lot of the kids did, you know, and it was not an important thing to me. I would have rather have worn the same clothes every day, you know, so that was one thing. And then the second thing was that it took a really long time to connect with other kids my age in my classroom, and they all thought I was smart just because I came from England as well. So that was another thing, the expectation to that, you know, that they just had these preconceived ideas, I think, of what you're like. And they liked the way I spoke because I had an English accent and stuff, but I didn't feel like I connected beyond that with people. And that they also felt a lot older to me. And I remember going to high school, and I started in the middle of the high school year because I changed schools, but all the kids were just so different. They had like hairspray in their hair, they were wearing makeup and stuff, and I felt like they were several years older than I was, and they weren't. So there was a real I felt very young and kind of naive compared to the other kids in my high school. And I think it took me years to like get comfortable And I was very comfortable my senior year, which, and it was time to go by then.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's quite interesting. You coming over and having a difficult time connecting, feeling like you were on the same age level. So was it like 15, 14, 15 when you came from the UK?
When I was about 13,
Oh, 13. Okay.
yeah, and then when I went to high school, was that 13 or 14? I can't remember exactly what it was. I think it was like 13, 14 for high school maybe. Yeah, I think that that's probably a time when kids go through lots of changes anyways, because they go from middle school to high school in the US. And it's a really big transition time, and then your teenage years, you're changing quite a lot, as well. So I had that barrier, and then also there's a cultural thing because I have parents who are Pakistani and Indian, and they did not grow up in these countries either. So my dad moved to London for university, and my mum moved from Pakistan to Taiwan and then to London after getting married. So we have there's just also a cultural difference in that sense as well. And I went to high school in Florida, and it wasn't very diverse there at that time. It was mostly you didn't see a lot of diversity. We'd go to a grocery store, and if my mum would see someone else who looked like they're from any kind of Asian country, it was like immediate connection. All of a sudden, they're like best friends, you know. It was very rare to find other people from our culture over there.
Oh wow. Okay, so you moved to Florida
Yeah.
and then you started like high school, you were transitioning to high school
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
coming from the background of wearing uniforms and having a different school structure.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I went to high school, it is a big transition, even being an American and being within the system is like all of a sudden. For me, I transitioned to high school when I was 15, and so, but all of a sudden you're with like people that are 18, and it just feels like there's miles in between a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old, and the things that they wear, the things they talk about, the things they care about. The 15-year-old is terrified of going to high school, and the 18-year-old is thinking about like life after school. And it's just such a transition. I imagine if that was nothing like your experience in school thus far in the UK, say when you got there, it was like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. It was quite a shock, to go there. But at the same time, I've always, because we've had so many moves, and I'm one of three sisters, so wherever I went, I often had a sister with me, or sometimes I didn't, but they would soon be following me to wherever I because of our age difference. So I think we were quite close in that way. I mean, we did sisterly things as well, you know, but we were, that was our bond almost. We had each other, and sometimes we didn't need other people because we had each other.
Yeah, oh,
So,
so
yeah.
sweet. Because I have three siblings, and growing up, I was very, very close to my sister, and my only sister. I have two older brothers, and so I do get that like sibling sort of like we have each other. We don't need anybody else.
Yeah, it's because we moved so much and went to so many different schools and stuff. So it was almost like kind of a bit scary to kind of have to start over and make new friends and stuff. And it was really hard at first. So that's why we kind of had each other almost. And I remember when I'd go to a different like section of the school where you don't see the younger kids anymore. I remember it being quite tricky, but then I did do it eventually. But it was that having to let go, if you know what I mean, and start anew is hard. But I also remember moving back from the US, because I lived in New York for 9 to 10 years, and then going from New York to London, I remember that being really hard as well, because everyone just assumed that I would know what it's like to live in London. And but it had been probably about like maybe 18 years or something since I had lived in London. So it really was like coming back to a brand new place and not knowing how things work there. And I've been quite muddled. People will speak with me and they're like, we don't know where to place you from, almost, because I my accent has lots of little bits in it off that I think off Canada, US, and living in England as well, and from where I'm from culturally, I suppose, as well. So I think that's a really hard question for me when people say, where are you from? And I'm like, well, how much do you want to know? I don't. And sometimes if I say, oh, I'm from England or I'm from New York, they're like, no, where are you really from? And I think that, so I mean, oh, you want to know where my parents are from? Kind of, and this where are you from question, I find is quite difficult for me.
It's interesting because my husband has a similar experience with accents, where he was raised in France by a French father and a British mother. And so he knew English from very young, like it would be technically his second language, but he was raised with it. And then when he was about 18, he went to Spain and then to the US, where he would study and I would meet him. I was exposed for many, many years to the American accent, and of course every day through me. And but it was also coupled with like his British upbringing and his Americanness and us living in the US and then now moving back to France. And so when my husband speaks English, French people don't believe that he's French. He speaks English so well without a French accent that they don't think that he's natively French. And but it's really funny to see, because people will argue with him. They're like, oh, your parents are from France, or you grew up like 3-4 years in France. And he's like, no, I was born, raised all of my life. I live there now. And I feel like he could really relate to that question, or his accent being unplaceable, especially when he speaks in English. When he speaks French, immediately they know that he's French because he has all the right intonations and the right gestures and the right emphasis on words and all this stuff, all of those things. And so it's interesting to hear from another person that feels the same, but their accent is kind of difficult to place, or where are you from, or where did you grow up? Or
Yeah. And even just that where are you from question, it feels quite, it's quite hard. And for a lot of people, that's a really easy question to answer, isn't it? So,
for me, I get it when I'm abroad. So recently I went to Hawaii with my family to see other parts of my family, my extended family. And they asked me, oh, where are you from? I'm like,
yeah.
What do I say now? Because I don't sound 100% American. And now, where am I from? Well, I flew from my home in France.
Yeah.
But I was raised in the US, so where am I from?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, not as intensely as your upbringing, but I can relate to that question as well, is when I'm in like a tertiary place, like not in Oklahoma and not in France, then it's like, where are you from? Well,
yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, I think when some of the advantages of this is that I can really find connection with people quite quickly based on all these different experiences. So when I'm working with parents, I often we will quite easily find common ground to connect on because of all of these different varied experiences. And in London, there's people from so many different countries living there. And same for when I lived in New York, there's people from so many different countries as well. So it made it very easy to connect with people. And I was somehow attracting a lot of families that lived in New York when I moved from New York to London, and I wasn't even trying. It was like something in the world was just bringing us together. And I had so many families at first from New York when I moved to London, and I found really great comfort in that because it was familiar, just something familiar while living in a place that was so different, that had kind of thrown me off kilter almost, and having people that had that kind of knew where my past was in a way, and I could just speak and not have to worry that they're going to misunderstand what I'm saying. Because I feel even going from the US to London, even though we have the same language, but some words have a different meaning almost. So even the word, like in the US we might say, oh, we're mad about something, but in England saying you're mad about something, it means that you're really, really, really mad about something. But I think in the US it doesn't mean you're that mad about it, you know. So just things like that kind of really get lost in translation a lot when you're going between countries. Finding people that were kind of on this similar wavelength then was really comforting, I found.
I can really relate to that because it's still the same for me. Even when I find Americans in France or abroad, and that they live outside of the US, not just ones that are traveling, but they actually live outside of the US, then it's always comforting to talk to them because, like you just said, it feels like a warm blanket that understands you. They know your upbringing. They know what you experienced in your life. Even if you weren't raised in the same state, it's like, it's that cultural blanket that feels comforting. And so it's like you're naturally just attracted to them because it brings comfort. It brings certainty. It brings familiarity. And so I can really relate to that because it's just like, oh, I don't have to defend this persona or be this person or act in this manner or don't act in this manner. They just accept me for who I am because they understand my upbringing.
Yeah.
Okay, now I want to ask, is how do you think that these experiences of moving all over the country, being raised in different cultures with different languages, has affected you as an adult and the career path that you chose?
Yeah, so I'm not sure how it has affected me in choosing my career, but I come, so when I grew up, though, there was always this thought of becoming a doctor. And it's a very common thing. And I think I didn't know much else except that. But what I did know growing up and is because we had a lot of cousins. I often would be taking my cousins to like nursery, or we'd be like playing with them or doing stuff. But I was like the older one in that little batch, you know, so I was kind of responsible. And I always knew and always thought that I would work with children. And also I've grown up from having a grandmother who worked in a school. She was a headmistress of a school and she ran the school, and my mum was a teacher. And so there's this kind of history almost. I don't think I realized it or put two and two together at the time that, but it's I don't think it's a coincidence in a way that all these women in this line have been working with kids, you know? So I'm sure in some level, either it's like within me or inside me in my genes, or it's I was attracted to it in some way. But I always knew I'd work with children. And then I had this other idea. I thought I was going to become a doctor. And then I actually was doing pre-med for when I went to university for my first year. And I had this backup plan because when you're going to think about becoming a doctor, you have a backup plan in case it doesn't work for pre-med and stuff. So I had this backup plan of biomedical engineering because, you know, I liked math. So I hated engineering like so much. And I probably could have nearly failed it if I had stayed longer than a year. I hated being in a big university campus. I didn't, but I actually liked it, but I didn't do well with it in being in a big campus, big classrooms. So then my mum told me about occupational therapy, and I was like, what on earth is that? You know, I had no idea what it was. And then I saw these pictures of children. And so I'm like, oh, children, that's good. Because I want to work with children. And then there were and also children. And I saw a picture of these clinics with swings and stuff. Oh, that looks really, really fun, you know, and there's science behind it. So it's still this healthcare and a kind of medical aspect to it. And it's with children. And I just had a, I decided within 3 weeks that I'm going to do this. And I applied to the university and they were taking people like me who are changing their minds very quickly. And I committed to 5 years of this program. And it's what I do now. That picture I saw of that clinic with swings and stuff was sensory integration clinic. And I work with children with sensory processing needs and differences. And it's been 26 years. And I don't know if it's weird or not, but it's whatever you want to call it. I probably was like that child that needed that kind of support when I was a child, because I had lots of sensory needs and differences. And I still do to this day. So you know how they say that you're drawn to something that would help you almost? So that happened. And then I had my son, I had been an OT for about 14 years or so. And I had my son, and he has a lot of sensory processing needs and differences as well. So it's, I don't know if I may have gone on a tangent from your question, but I always find this quite interesting almost how things worked out in this way. I got into something with children, which I always knew, and then something that would have helped myself, but also helps my future child. So I always say that the families I worked with for those 14 years as an OT before having my son have really helped me in so many ways I didn't realize, because it helped me with like parenting my future child as well.
Oh my goodness, Neera. Yeah. It's like everything came full circle for you.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like you traveled down the path that you were meant to be on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also the having my son has really made me better pediatric occupational therapist as well, because I have this lived experience, not only from my own life, but also from parenting my own child. So that also really helps me to connect with families and to share my journey. But then I've got this community now for the work that I do. And I feel like I have created this community for myself as well, because I get to be with other people who are like me, who get my journey and who get what's happening in my life as well. And it's really nice to have that kind of a tribe who you can feel that way with. But then I also work with them as well. So it's it's been really, it's quite an interesting journey.
Oh, I love it so much. And it's shocking to me how similar our stories are. And they kind of branch in different ways. But also young age, I knew I wanted to work with children. I adore babies. I've always loved kids. I was just drawn to them. And if you feel that same kind of energy, it's like when you're with them, for me, people complain or adults complain like, oh, children are so draining. But for me, they're like, they give me energy. Like they're so enticing and they're so interesting and they are just full of life and like creativity and all the things that are interesting in life. And I knew it from a very young age, I wanted to work with children. And then like you, I also followed my path. I went to university and for me, I wanted to be a teacher. So more like your mother. I remember the people around me really questioning, are you sure you want to be a teacher? Because in my state in Oklahoma, the pay was not there. Absolutely not. It was not the most financially sound career that you could go into, but it was what my heart was calling. And I was like, I have to move in this direction. And then on top of that, once I got my degree and then I specifically wanted to work with children that needed me the most. And I chose to work in impoverished communities, in inner city schools. And that's where I wanted to. That's not where I was raised, but I wanted to work where people needed me. I just didn't want to be a teacher. It was like I wanted to be a transformer. I wanted to connect with the kids really emotionally and give them an example of somebody who could lift them up and be more for them and take them out of their everyday lives and put them into experiences that would mold them into small adults. And it's always been a part of me. I absolutely adore children. So for you, hearing you like being called and always wanting to work with kids, I'm like, yes, that was me too. And when I moved to France, it was actually really hard for me because not only was it all the cultural and the language thing, but it was like I was no longer around children. I was pregnant at the time, but I was no longer kids. And I had been around kids every single day, 8 to 10 hours a day for the last 4 years when I was teaching. And then it was like, no kids. And it was really sad because for me, kids give me energy and so much light and so much purpose.
And I think what I love about kids is just how authentic they are and how real they are. And actually, when we listen to what kids say, there's so much like brightness in what they say, and so much is true about what they think and feel. And I was just thinking also just about the teaching is because now what I do for the last 4 years or so is I actually started when I had my son. I did a lot more work closely with parents. I think becoming a parent myself with a child who had more needs, I guess, is that I felt like I needed, as being that parent, I needed support as well. And then so that made me want to do more work with the parents of the kids that I work with to give them that support as well. And as my child grew up, I just did more of that with the kids that I worked with as well, more support for the parents, because I feel that was a real big missing piece in working with kids, is there's a lot of work being done on the kids or with the kids, but not as much with the parents. So the parents feel quite alone and unsure of how to do things at home in their daily life. And then now my work, there's a lot of teaching and working together with parents, which if I think in a way is kind of gone full circle back to what my mum and my grandma did. It was just teaching. So it's kind of funny in a way. So I still do work with children, but I do more with parents and their kids.
Yes, and I can see that transition between like once you working with kids and you have your own son who had sensory challenges as well, and then you realizing actually I need to support the parents just as much as the children. And that again, it's so interesting. When I talk to so many people, I think, you know, everybody's going to have a different story. Nobody's going to relate to my own experiences. And what I find out is actually, the experience of being human is incredibly similar. No matter how you grew up, no matter where you're from, no matter your background, your culture, the language that you speak, is that we all have very similar experiences. And for me, when I transitioned from not working with children anymore, I realized that why I adore children and I absolutely still love being around them. It was that aspect of being a transformer, making an impact on people's lives that really drew me to teaching. And so, still keeping those things very close to me, that is what drives me in my business, is making impact, being a transformer, someone who can change the outcome of that person's life. And when I transitioned into now being a coordinator for holistic events, is that's my whole purpose, right? Is to still create massive impact, to still transform people's lives. And that desire has been in me for years, for decades. And it's like that internal flame that always burns. Like, this is the mission of my life. This is what I should be doing. If I'm not doing something that is in alignment with impact and transforming people, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And I feel that very deeply. Do you have a similar kind of internal flame?
For me, it is to be my thing is I want to help parents to feel empowered, and for parents, because I think in society we often parents are made to feel like they're not the expert. So my thing is to really to for parents to know that they are the expert on their child, and that they have something that nobody else has, and that is like they have this intuition of what to do to help their child and what is right for their child. And it's because we are mammals, and mammals have this this feeling for their child of what to do, right, for their babies. And we do too as parents. And so that is my thing is I want parents to know that they can do the learn the information, and that they probably already know a lot of the information to do to support their child, and that they are the expert on their child, and that they have this inner voice and this in I like the way you say it, like an inner flame of to tell them and direct them of what is best for their child. And so that's my one of my big missions. And then I have another one is that kids also have this feeling of knowing as well, and that we should be listening to what children say as well, and that they have great knowledge about themselves too, and that we want kids to also to listen to that voice that they have inside of them, and for it not to be pushed away. So if they have different needs, and that they should be listening to that, they should be listening to what their body needs, and we shouldn't be like dampening that, if that makes sense, what I'm trying to say. So those are my, and I think so it's actually quite interesting. They both go along this having this inner voice and listening to yourself inside, and how you feel in your body to be really driving you.
I absolutely adore this approach from like a medical personnel, like from you're a pediatric occupational therapist, and I think, oh my goodness, like it's almost to be celebrated that you're presenting these ideas to me, because for me, so much so, as a daughter and a parent, I have experienced so much pushback from the medical community about knowing what's best for my loved ones. For my mother, through all of the health scares that she's had in the last year, and with my daughter raising her. Because before my daughter was born, I made the transition to being plant-based. And I chose to have a plant-based pregnancy and to raise my daughter plant-based until she's of an age that she can make the decision on her own. And I can't tell you how many times I've experienced pushback and refusal to work with me, refusal to advise me medically, because I am plant-based and my daughter is as well. And so for me to hear somebody within the healthcare community, I'm just like, oh, I should like shout it from the rooftops that Manira is, paving the way to a more inclusive culture. Because it is so exhausting to feel like, from a parental view, where I have had experience so much pushback from the medical community, is it's exhausting to constantly hear like, you're not doing what's right for your child. You're putting them at risk. They could die. They could develop diseases when they're older. All of these things that could happen, or in their minds that could happen. And they're not even willing to. The nutritionist that I met with was 100% unwilling to even speak to me about nutrients for my daughter because she was plant-based. And I feel so passionate about it. I can feel it. I can feel like my fire, like warming up my body. And I just Oh my goodness. I applaud you so much and praise you for having that mentality that
I think
parents have an like an internal intuition about what's best for their child.
but I as a parent myself, because we had a team of about eight plus different health professionals at when my son was born, and I was all often told that I'm like looking into things, or they would say, oh, the mother happens to be an occupational therapist and says, and that's almost like saying she says this, but it's not true kind of thing. So this has happened to me as well, being someone in the profession who had worked with infants with like my son for 14 years before that, and I was still kind of gaslighted, I guess, by the system. So it's I've had it happen to me as well, and I think that's another it's another reason your own life experiences really kind of push you to want to do stuff for other people going through the same as you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's the reason in combination with wanting to make an impact and transform people's lives. It's also my own personal experience within the medical system about being plant-based or using holistic or alternative care in conjunction or instead of traditional care. And you are met with so much pushback, refusal to listen. I don't want to, all that's like, as in the US, hogwash. It's all a bunch of baloney. None of it's true. And you should just be on this path, taking this medication or living this lifestyle, eating this diet, just da -da 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 -da, in a straight little
Yeah.
line. And I just don't believe that life is like that. And I think that there's so many holistic alternatives and modalities and therapies that can really help rejuvenate and protect and reverse many different like mental and physical ailments that people experience. And like those two things combined is the reason that I now host holistic events.
I love that.
Yes. Oh
Yeah.
my goodness.
I love
We're just
both
like,
your journey, and I love what you do as well with alternative healing.
yes, that's thank you. Thank you
Yeah.
so much. So, I have another question for you.
Okay.
What are some of the most valuable lessons you've learned throughout your life and your career?
Oh, I have to think for a minute. One is I think is to kind of follow your gut instinct, and also that, and I think for me, I have made some decisions in life that have sometimes seemed like to some it might look like it's too quick. You know, but I think that those quick decisions have been my gut instinct telling me what to do, and those things have been really great for me. So becoming an OT, that was a really quick decision, and some may think that, oh, you hardly even thought about it and you just did it, you know, and you 5 years in university and you did it. So, but I think for me, those quick decisions have been my gut instinct and my intuition just kind of guiding me and telling me what to do. So that's one of them is to kind of sometimes you have to go a little bit quiet and listen to your voice inside of you to guide you what to do. And then second, I think that like all these experiences that I have had in life, I feel that they have kind of led me to somewhere. And even though I may not have realized it at the time, but they've kind of shaped me and helped me to do what I do. And so even though it might seem sometimes that something is quite crappy going on in your life, I feel like it will lead, once you get through it, it will lead you to the next thing. And that experience has, I'm being a bit vague here, I think, but that experience has helped me with other parts of what I do as well, or other areas in my life.
Oh, those are very valuable lessons. I want to go back to the first one about making quick decisions, because I promise, me and you, we are like replicas of each other's in different experiences, like different life paths, but so many similar experiences. And I have been critiqued on this my entire life about making quick decisions. And for me, it's just always been about, like, I prepare for a decision before it's actually presented to me. So I'm like, okay, I'm in my life, I'm a pretty decisive person. I also know for mostly what I want. So I'm like, okay, I want this, 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 and this. And so when a situation arises and you have to make a decision, I'm like, okay, well, it clicks the first three of things that I want. It feels right internally. It feels like my energy is excited to go there. Decision made. And it's like, I don't understand the necessity to have really elongated decision-making processes. And I've always felt like that. And to hear somebody else say the same thing, miraculous for me. And recently I attended the Stephen Bartlett Business and Life Tour. And one of the things he talked about was making quick decisions. He actually emphasized the importance of being able to make quicker decisions. Because if you took too long making the decisions, it was like your internal voice, or that internal sort of like small Rachel on my shoulder that likes to tell me that nothing is ever going to work out, then the voice grows louder. And then you start like, oh, well, can I really do this? You start talking yourself out of it and taking steps backwards the longer you take to make a decision. And so, of course, if you're investing millions of pounds, you know, you need to understand all the aspects of it, and not to say like, just, you know, click your fingers, invest that much. But if you've taken the time to understand what's going on, then, and you already know that going in to that meeting for that large investment, then you can make a very quick decision, because you know if it does or does not like fit within the parameters of what you want. And for me, it's even down to basic things like going shopping for clothes, where it's like, okay, I know the style I like. I love colorful, I love flowery, I like loud clothes, I like flowy stuff. And so if I put on something and it makes me feel good and I like the way that I look in it and I'm feeling like it really reflects who I want to be, it's not very hard for me to make the decision to buy it or not. And because I wouldn't have even tried it on if it wasn't within the budget I was willing to spend on it. And so people are always like, oh my gosh, you like, I have to like think about it. I need to go home and decide if this sweater or this dress is going to work, and where would I wear it to? And is it really worth all that money? And what is its material? I'm just like, whoa, that's way too many thoughts going into this process. It's like, how does it make you feel? I'm a feeling type of person. And so it's wonderful to hear that you make quick decisions too.
Actually, didn't think about it for clothes, because I'm quite quick the other way as well to say no. Like, I can go into a store, and I don't really like shopping very much. I'll start with that. But I can go into a store and I will kind of just quickly look, have a glance around, and I like, no, it's not for me. So, and I walk out. But if I find something I like, I will like wear that thing for like for a really, really long time. So I'm wearing this thing. You won't see it because on the audio, but I love this particular jumper off mine, and I wear it all the time, and I have for years, and I'm just now worried what's going to happen once it's not going to be wearable anymore. But it was such a quick decision to get this, and but I didn't think of it applying to other smaller areas of life as well, but it's true, it does.
Absolutely. And I feel that there needs to be a community of us quick decision makers. So that, because society tells us that it's like you're being too rash. You're making too fast of decisions. You're not actually thinking through your decisions. And I don't feel like that at all. Like, I feel like I've already thought through the decision. And it's just like, is it a yes or is it a no? And you could just instantaneously make that decision. And Stephen Bartlett even goes into the idea, he breaks it in, like really breaks it down to four quadrants. Is this a life alternating decision, or is this a decision you can come back to? That's, and then it's like he puts it on a fast or slow decision making scale. And so if it's one that you can come back to, like you can bounce back from that decision, then this should be very like snap your fingers quick, that we don't need to spend extensive amount of time talking and thinking about it. Whereas if it's like a life alternating, like this is something you can never come back from. This is something is like this is the, going to be the direction of your life. It's like you need to take time processing that and thinking about it more. But he also emphasized how there's a very small portion of decisions that are life alternating. And most of the decisions in your life are very, you can bounce back from them. Oh, I bought a black sweater, but I really wanted a pink one. Well, that's easy. Like you just go back to the store, exchange it, or buy a new one, and life is good. And even moving to France for me, we made it very, very quickly. We decided in August we were going to move, and in December of the same year, we moved. We owned a house in the US. We sold it, sold like so much of our belongings, figured out all the paperwork that was necessary for our dog to move as well. Then found out I was pregnant during that time, but we still moved in December. And I think had we waited 1 year to one, have my daughter, figure out every single plan, every single dot on that paperwork, I still think I would be living in Oklahoma.
Sometimes like the sequence of events just happen quickly when it's kind of just meant to be.
Yes, absolutely. And I loved your advice about going quiet, listening to your internal guiding system, and following your life experiences, knowing that even though it doesn't make sense right now, it does play into a grand scheme of where you're meant to be in your life. I love those things. Is there anything else, any other advice that you would give to maybe upcoming entrepreneurs or people trying to find their path in life that they're just really unsure, or they're in a tumultuous time right now?
I think as an entrepreneur, I think of myself, I know I am a business person as well, but I think of myself very much as an occupational therapist. And maybe other people can relate to this too, because I often think of myself not being a very good entrepreneur. But then also, I do come from a line of business people on my dad's side. So my dad was, he used to do import export. And his dad did the same. And so I come from a line of genetics that are like traders in a way. So, and that is a business person, but I don't really, I guess, connect with that side. And it's funny because I've had my own business after, so I worked independently as a pediatric occupational therapist 3 years after working in a clinic. And I have done so for so since then. So it's been 23 years, but I still don't think of myself as a very good business person in that sense. So in a way, I have some second guesses or doubts about giving business advice, thinking that I'm not a good business person, but I've done it for 23 years. So that's ridiculous, isn't it? So I've just kind of proven myself wrong in that sense. But I think one of the things I've done is I've kind of really gone with the flow quite a lot in what I do. So I started out, I m moved very quickly to California from living in New in so I went to university in Buffalo, New York, and then I decided that I'm going to move to California. And I think I decided made that decision within 10 days. I went, done an interview, got the job, and moved within 10 days from my parents were in Canada at the time. So I that was very quick. And then I went, so I worked in this sensory integration clinic, just like the picture I saw when I decided I'm going to do occupational therapy. And then I did that for 3 years. And then I went to New York to be closer to my family. And that started off being an independent OT. And then I moved to London, and I started a clinic when I had my son, to kind of suit around my family life. So I think in a way my business has always kind of gone with where I am in terms of family at the time. So when my son was born, I had a clinic, and it was actually funny the way it worked out, because I kind of needed to be around for him a lot more. So I had a clinic in our house. And then lockdown happened. I'd broken my hand, and lockdown happened, so we couldn't really see kids at that time directly. And my son started a YouTube channel, and basically he told me that I should also make videos for parents about working, what to do with their kids. And that's basically what my program is at this time. So it was also another quick decision. So I think that's my business experience has been to kind of go with the flow. And I guess for me, I feel like there've been different signs for me of what to do. And they've been quick decisions as well sometimes. And also it for me, I can say at first it has taken time to build what I have, and it has but it does come as well. So in the beginning it may not seem like something is happening, but all those little things that you are doing is building up to something, and you will see the benefits of it down the road as well. I don't know, is that vague advice?
No, it's perfect, and you absolutely have so much business advice to depart, like to allow yourself to share with others, to impact other people and entrepreneurs and people within your field and not within your field, that you're so experienced and you have so much like of your own experience in vast like industries, working with like within the clinic, having your own clinic at your house, being an independent one, working online, working with parents. Like there's so many things that you've gone through, and you have so much information and expertise that you can part with. Like give to other people and to help other people that are along the way. And so I hope that you believe that. And I definitely agree. Going with the flow is sort of the lesson of entrepreneurship, right? It's like life is going to happen, and it's not always going to go in the direction that you think it should, or that you want it to go in, or in the time span that you're going to want it to happen in. And so just taking a deep breath and accepting things as they are, going with the flow, what happens in your life. And I think that's brilliant. That's the advice. Just go with the flow and accept yourself where you are. I love it.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I think for me, what I've gotten out of just speaking with you is that I kind of find it, it's very silly of me to think. I've been an OT for 26 years, and I've had my own, worked for myself for 23 years. So I need to start thinking that I do know something about business.
You are powerful.
Yeah.
You're knowledgeable, you're powerful, and you have value to add to other people's lives. And that you have experience that people can learn from. That's so, so, so important. And I know that the people that tune in and listen to this episode, they're going to feel the same way. And they're going to take something from this episode, from your experiences, and they're going to be able to apply it to their own life. Or maybe they're experiencing things right now that they don't know how to get through. And hearing your advice, hearing your experiences will help them through that. I know for me, always interacting and connecting with somebody who has moved all over the world, who has experienced many of the same things that I have, and the difficulties of moving to a new country always makes me feel more heard and more seen.
Yeah, same here.
Manira, I appreciate your time so much today, and I have loved having you on Step Into Your Sunshine. And I would love for you to tell everyone, where can we connect with you, and where are you living right now? Or because I think you're living between two places, so tell us all the details.
Yeah. So my business is out of the UK, and I am mostly in London, and I visit Canada quite a bit because I've got family over here as well. And I can be found. So I have a website called OT, the number four kids, KIDS.co.uk. And I have a Facebook page called OT for Kids with Manira. And I have a Facebook group called Helping Kids Write, which is where I help parents with their children's writing by using what I call a no writing way. And that's because writing is often the tip of the iceberg and really a reflection of other needs. So I help parents to get to the root cause, and we start from where kids are at and develop their sensory processing, emotional regulation, coordination, and all the little skills that get to writing in a very child-led way, so that it is meaningful and purposeful and following kids' passions and their interests at the same time. So that's what I do in my programs and my groups.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, you guys all need to connect with her, and she can help your children. If your children are SEND children experiencing sensory challenges, then she's definitely the person to connect with. I appreciate all of you guys for tuning in to this episode of Step Into Your Sunshine. We have new episodes dropping every Monday and Thursday at 8 p.m. And I can't wait to talk to all of you soon.